Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, your weekly dose of Porsche culture. With Tech Talk, Heritage, the Ren Builds playlists, along with a massive dollop of waffle, we'll keep you entertained. So subscribe now on any podcast streaming service and YouTube. Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to the honest episode. So if you follow the podcast for a while, you'll know that I drop content on the podcast every Thursday, and there was a gap. So I've always made a commitment to myself when I started Rengineering that whatever the situation, whether it's projects or whether it's me or whether it's shoots, whatever it is, that I'll be completely honest and transparent all the time. So I'm gonna do that now. I took a gap because my mental health is not great at the moment, and the amount of pressure that I put on myself to keep getting content out every single week on top of a full-time job is significant, coupled with a couple of things that had happened that you guys would never have known about. The metrics and the way they kind of measure listening figures and interactions, all that stuff changed fairly recently. And it's made it quite difficult really to know whether this is actually getting to anybody or anyone's listening. So Chartable, who the chart, basically think about it as the, you know, the Hot 100 or kind of the top 10 or top 100 in the UK. Or whatever it is, wherever you're in the world and listening to this, your music chart, the Chartable is effectively that for podcasts. Now, about 18 months ago, the podcast hit a high of 16 in the UK chart, and it's been 4 or 5 in Australia and similar in Denmark, Sweden, all over the place. It's kind of charted quite highly at points. At the moment, it's not. Struggling to get traction, and I think some of that's because of the gap that I left between finishing season 2 and starting season 3. You've almost got to kind of then really gather the audience back. So, but the reality is, when you're doing it full time, then of course, or you've got enough financial backing that you can shoot the content and then hand it to an editor, and they just put all the content up for you. So all you're responsible for really is recording the podcast, and everything else is left to somebody else. The reality is, and you'll notice that there's never any ads on Rengineering, the Rengineering podcast. That's because there are no ads. So I do all of it. I do all the recording. I schedule all the bookings. I prep for those bookings. If I can get support, and it's voluntary, from people to support me, then I will. But for the most part, even including a couple of bookings coming up, it's just me. So I'm out there kind of prepping, you know, building the business and kind of getting people connected and, you know, making those requests to shoot with them. The 2 or 3 hours sometimes, or 4 or 5 hours sometimes, to get to their location, shoot all the content, get back, harvest all that and kind of bank it all, and then process that, edit it and get it out and turn it into actual content you can listen to. On top of a daytime job as well, it's just relentless to try and keep that up. And then when you see some of the listening figures and you think, oh, you know, it's not kind of a runaway success, or you're not kind of getting the feedback. And it's not to say I'm not getting feedback, because I am. It's just, it's I don't know, too high aspirations potentially for the amount of work I can do, and including, you know, posting on Instagram or other social media sites. If you try and again maintain that, you really have to run it like a business to be super effective and keep building it like a business. I just simply don't have the energy. So if I'm doing it and I'm in really good headspace and I'm feeling passionate and excited and confident, it goes without a problem. And I'm all over it, and I'm trying to do the best I can at the behest of my loving wife, who's always patient with me, but yeah, so it takes a lot to try and do that. Then you add a bit of complication in with mental health, and if that takes a dip, the will and effort it takes to have some self-belief and self-confidence, the amount that I would normally have, just isn't there. And then to do that and either shoot an intro or build the content and be proud of it and then put it out, it becomes quite difficult to even do that, let alone sort of doing it at the pace and the regularity that I kind of want to. And then you've got the other flip side of that is that you know, if I summon that energy, I get it all together and I kind of put something out, I'm then watching like a hawk to see whether there's good positive feedback or there's any feedback or looking at the viewing figures. And it becomes quite toxic quite quickly to do that, because you just focus only on the, well, is it better than what happened, what was there before? And it's just, I don't envy anybody that's a social media influencer, unless you've got people around you doing it, or unless you're kind of just that hungry, and I'm not, it's really tough. So yeah, so that's why there was a gap last week. That's why I thought, you know what, I'm going to take some time out, record something that is me just being completely honest. And one thing I will say actually is, when I say, please do like, share, subscribe, leave a comment, or trying to get you guys to interact, I'm not saying that in the same way that you would say, you know, people kind of roll that stuff off and it almost seems a bit like a sales pitch, you know. There is a single person here doing all this heavy lifting to try and make this content and put it out there. So I read every single comment, I read every single review. If people send me messages, I read every single message and I try and reply to every single one. So it really isn't the same as when someone goes, like, share, subscribe. There's a person at the end of this working hard. So, and that's not to say, again, that's not to say there haven't been lovely comments. I've had some brilliant comments. And in fact, a friend of mine screenshotted a comment from a different Porsche WhatsApp group from a different part of the country, saying that they really enjoyed some content, particularly the Hartek content actually with Baz. And you know what, like those things, when I get sent those, they mean a huge amount, because it gives me that kind of, okay, well, there's someone listening, there's someone that cares about this stuff. I'm not just that that one guy, you know, there's one guy in Mongolia that's listening. it's really lovely to know that there's some feedback. So I thought I'd take some time out and record this just straight directly to you, tell you where my head's at and tell you why there's been a bit of a gap last week, and try and reconnect. So that's it really. I'm not going to spend too much time wallowing in self-pity. I do want to get myself together. I've got some really great content coming up. I've literally got a second episode with Frank Cassidy coming in a week and a half, and on the same day, believe it or not, I'm off to Tuthill to spend an hour with, I've had 2 hours with Richard Tuthill. You know, we've had Porsche in the Park, a collaboration with Michelin at Boxing Gas Megaphonics this year. So by all accounts, if you look at the success and the growth, it's there, it's happening. It's just, it's incredibly hard to keep doing it, especially when it's not monetized. So I get nothing for doing all of this. So I'm sure there's a few of you who's doing the kind of mini violin thing. I choose to do this. No one's making me do it. I love creating the content, and I'm actually really proud of the content. There's some, particularly if I think about Baz again, I'm really proud of some of the episodes, and I look at some of the early stuff I did, and even talking to you now, I feel completely comfortable sitting down and talking into this microphone, knowing it's going to get recorded, or it's being recorded and it's going to go out for everyone to listen to. I don't have that same sense of panic or nerves or not knowing how to speak about it, or shooting to camera again. Back in the early days, everything felt really difficult, and now it's second nature to me. And I noticed that with Mike Brewer when I shot the episode with Mike Brewer. And hello, Mike, if you're listening to this, the start, the intro for that episode, I said, you don't need an intro for this, man. There's a few people in the world that don't need an intro, so I'm not going to do one. And if you watch the episode when it goes out or listen to it, you hear Mike go, hang on a second, I'd like an intro, thank you very much. And I just literally, like a light switch, jumped into and just did this intro with one take, no problems. So it's long form content. I'm not chasing algorithms. I'm not not trying to, you know, follow trends in any particular way. I'm just trying to make content that I believe in, that is that I think's quality, that I think you can listen to in now or in 2 months' time or 2 years' time, and it's still going to stand up. That's what I'm focusing on. It just trying to find an audience without kind of hooking onto trends or, you know, pumping tons of effort into social media. It just takes time. So, and then obviously that you kind of, if you're one of those people that's lucky and doesn't suffer from anxiety or depression, then I wonderful. For those of you that listen to this that have had or have anxiety and depression, the motivation it takes to get going again is incredibly difficult. So I just wanted to take a bit of time to summarize all of that, get you guys completely connected. If you do care about this, I'm not suggesting that I'm going to stop it. I might, at worst, I will slow down and put content out when it works for me, as opposed to trying to put something every week. But for the moment, I really owe it to the people that have invested their time in me to keep putting the content out regularly. So I'm going to keep doing that. But once I've gone through all of season three, if I'm still feeling that it's not adding to my life, I might slow down a little bit. But this is your opportunity. So if you're liking the content and you want to see and hear more, and I don't say, and like I said earlier on, I'm not saying this flippantly, leave a comment, leave a review. You know, you can go into Spotify on your iPhone or Android phone, and you can do that. You can do it in a mobile. I don't think you can do it on the desktop, but you can definitely do it on a mobile. I will read every single one. If you DM me at RenEngineeringUK on Instagram, that's the best place. I barely check Facebook. Then I'll reply to you. If I see you at an event or something, definitely, you know, I've said this before, come over. And again, I didn't say that tritely. I genuinely meant it. I really love seeing people. And if they talk to me about the content and they've enjoyed it, or they pick an episode and they've found that episode that's been helpful for them. Again, I don't do those. Those things mean something to me. It's not just somebody that's kind of got this army of people pumping episodes out every week. It's one guy. Enough of the violins anyway, and I feel like I've done my bit. I've vented my spleen, and it's been genuinely quite cathartic. So thank you for listening. If you get an opportunity to go for a drive, which I did today as well, then great, go and do that. If you get an opportunity to see your friends and do it, even better. And if you don't get an opportunity to go for a drive, then just catch up with your mates. I'm listening to that myself, because my temptation is to withdraw if I feel like this, and I'm not going to. I'm going to keep spending time with people. So if you're a regular listener, thank you so much. I could shout a few of you out, but I want to keep this kind of open to everybody. I really appreciate all your support, and I'll let you know how I go. I hope this hasn't been too dull for you. If you're one of those people that just is here for the content, I'm going to leave it on a bit of a high. The most commonly questioned or kind of that's cool comment that I get about my car is the gear knob. And Built by Basil, Simon from Built by Basil made that Carrera GT gear knob and etched in the R logo into the top of it, and I get comments and questions constantly about that thing. So a little while back I shot a very small piece, and it was 2 years ago I shot this. So there's a clear difference between the skill set I have now versus then, but I don't want to leave this on a heartfelt waffle. I'm going to leave it with something that reflects where I've come from or where I am right now, as a bit of a kind of positive thing to leave. So here is a few minutes of me with Simon from Built by Basil and him talking about how he got started, what he's doing right now, and how he makes those amazing gear knobs that you should all go and buy. They are brilliant. They are absolutely brilliant. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. I won't be back at the end on this one. I'm just going to leave you with myself and Simon from Built by Basil. Take care.
When I started, I kind of made a post about it on Reddit, and it was like kind of how I did it and worked out. And I think I made five.
Okay.
And I posted, like, made a little listing on Etsy for all five of them. And I was actually at a job, and I'd already written a post for Reddit, and I posted it as I was leaving site. I think it was like 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way home, like, I thought some people would see it and comment and say, that's pretty cool.
Mm.
And it hit like the front page of Reddit.
Did
it? The album got something like nearly 500,000 views.
Whoa!
And, I, like,
and all five just went ding, 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 ding.
Oh, yeah,
ding,
all five had sold by the time I got back to Bristol.
That's
time.
Amazing. You must have felt great about that.
Oh, mate, it was weird. It was really? Proper weird, because, like, my phone was, like, pinging with the Etsy notifications, and I was just like, just make money while driving home.
Yeah, that's it. And doing something you enjoyed in the first place. It wasn't like, I mean, you're putting time and effort in, but it's not something, you're not kind of, no one's beating you to do this. It's just stuff that you're interested in, and you thought you'd have a go at, so.
Yeah, like, then I didn't, like, have social media or anything. So I called my sister, like, because my sister works in, like, marketing, and she's really good. And I was like, I need, like,
I need a name.
Yeah, and I was like, Built My Basil. And she was like, yep, that works, do it. So I registered Instagram, and I was like, everyone just, like, follow me on Instagram. Like, that's all I can do. Like, I'll post when I get more. And that kind of started it.
And when was that? What year was that?
I think that was end of 2007.
Right.
Or end of 2016, I can't remember.
Yeah.
So I think it's 2016. But, yeah, and so then I just started doing more and more and more.
And did you get people, idiots like me, messaging you saying, can you do a version for this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right.
And, like, car people, like, we're quite picky people. So people say, I want this colour, can you do it in, like, this style?
Yeah.
And, like, as I started doing it more, I knew what I was getting into.
Yeah.
I know we're a fussy bunch. But yeah, so I started carrying on doing it, and it got more and more popular, and I got to the point where I found part-time work, because, like, I still have, like, I have wife, kids.
Of course.
I've got rent to pay, so I can't do that thing where everyone's like, oh yeah,
I just quit
my job and had a go.
Yeah, just Hollywood style. It just doesn't work like that, does it?
No. So pretty much what happened was after... I found a job and I was building like remote cameras, but they're used in like Planet Earth and BBC Spring Watch, and so they're all like stabilised, remote, pan tilt, waterproof. We did the America's Cup boats.
That's pretty amazing.
They were like, it was only a small team, there was like five of us, but those cameras, I think spec on those, they had to hit the water at 40 knots and still function, which was... So I did that, and that was, like, I did 20 hours a week for them, and then I had, like, 20 hours a week left to fill. And so I did a few hours at a local machine shop, where I was just kind of setting up and running their machines, and then I had a bit more time to do my own stuff. And then I got lucky, because someone who I know had helped set him up with the machine, because I think it was our wives knew each other, and they're like, Simon, you've got a background in machines, so... can you, like, help me understand what I need to do this? And he was working in his shed in his garden. And then he was like, I want to get a proper workshop.
Yeah.
And so there was a workshop a few miles from here. Came up and pretty much went in together. And so I had one side, he had the other. Mm-hmm. Like, quite a lot of shared equipment.
Yeah, sure.
And so that kind of got me out, because I was in my dad's shed. Because I didn't have a shed at my house.
Right.
So I'm like, dad's probably getting a bit fed up with me, like, constantly being in the shed.
I'm sure it wasn't, but at the same time, I get the feeling that you just want to be self-sufficient and kind of...
Like, I want to sort of my own space, and I didn't want to, like, be treading on his toes.
Of course not. And come and go whatever times you want and all that stuff.
Yeah. I was in that workshop, expanded a bit more, did quite a bit of, marketing, did well with some other people. Like, I did one for Bucky Lassick.
Yep, that's pretty cool.
That was cool, because, like, I reached out to him on Instagram and I was like, he's not gonna
no way he's probably like four, I don't know how many followers he's got. Millions, probably.
He's got like, I think he had like 750,000
followers.
He's like, I grew up watching him skate.
Yeah for sure.
And I was just like, that'd be so fucking cool, because I know he's like into like Subarus and stuff like that, and just like rallying. And I just messaged him and I was like, yeah, like, just send it and forget it. Then, like, a few hours later, I got a message back, and I was like, oh my God! And I was just, like, I had, like, a group chat with some other woodworker friends. I was like, look, guys, he fucking responded! And so I did his gig, and that was insane, because, like, I got a huge increase in the audience then. And
of course you did.
A lot more audience, which was really cool. Also, in that workshop, do you know the show Salvage Hunters Classic Cars?
Yes.
Paul came down and filmed, and like, I did a gain off of him.
Mm.
And that was like 2 years ago. They still haven't released the episode. Apparently it's coming out at Christmas.
Right. So I'm the same, right? So that I've got probably 15 or 16 pre-filmed in edit.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it's really hard, especially because I'm, so one thing I've learned, and by this time this goes out, everybody will know this anyway, I'm the world's worst at editing. I've tried, and it just takes me too long. So I got I spoke to a friend whose daughter is going through film school at the moment, and she's like, I could just use the experience of just editing stuff. Perfect.
Yeah.
So it's just left, it's backed up. So they're, you know, and they're obviously like a fully fitted out professional. I'm an idiot with a camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And someone helping me. So this will probably go out in like 6 months or something.
Yeah. But.
Away in the world.
Yeah. Like, and it's, like, I'm really crap at editing, but, like, I think that's part of the charm of some of my videos. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, part of the charm sounds a bit odd, but it's like, it's a bit raw and rough, and the thing is, what you do, you need to have a much more professional kind of edit.
I'd like to think so. I don't know, I have no idea whether it's coming across like that, but yeah. Like,
well, it is.
It is? Oh, that's good.
I watched your video on the interview for the guy in Formula One.
Yep.
And like, I was just like, it's just well put together.
Really? Like, Well, thanks for saying that, because it's really difficult, because... I'm like 42 years old, so it's the social media stuff I'm trying, but to track algorithms and know what the next thing that people could do and what Instagram is going to be like pushing, and then do what it's asking you to do, and then to grow the audience stuff, it's really, really hard. I find that stuff really hard. If you like these things, people will want this, right? You've got something that you found that people love and they want, and it's accessible.
And people want to show you their new car thing as well.
Yeah.
So like what I have is very, for want of a better word, easy to market.
For sure.
Like it sounds really bad, but I don't really have to try too hard.
I'm sure you don't. Whereas I've got something that's incredibly, the idea is complicated.
Yeah.
So to try and get that across in an engaging way that's really succinct, that people can bite-size, understand and go, I like it or I don't like it.
Yeah.
Mate, that's killed me trying to do
that. So, I do not envy.
But you know, I'm so committed and invested in the idea that at the end, all of this grind will be worth it, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just this kind of pre. It's almost like all your kind of pre-project starting stuff, or
the setup,
all of that, right? It's interesting for me, and I want to document it because it keeps me doing it.
Yeah,
and if I was just doing it when I felt like it, never get done. But a lot of this,
you always put it off to another day.
And then you don't make any progress, and then you're 2 years down the line. So, but the bit I've really enjoyed so far is going out and meeting people that might want to be involved at some point.
You got to meet Tiff
the other day. Yeah. I was at Tut Hill, so I did an interview with Richard Tut Hill.
Oh, wicked!
Yeah, there's all this stuff in the bank, mate, that so people haven't seen yet. So. Oh, man. Mike Brewer, I know Mike a little bit now. There's loads of people out there, and I've gone to see loads of companies. RPM Technic, for example, they've been really welcoming to me, and I've gone down and going back. I'm going to go there regularly and see them.
They're pretty local to you, aren't they?
No, mate. No, they were like 2.5 hours away.
Oh, I'm thinking of London.
Yeah, outside of London, but
yeah.
And that's the bit I found really interesting, right? The interviews, the meeting people, and learning about how they started out and how they're doing what they're doing now and whether it fits.
Yeah.
Like, for sure, that is the stuff that I have to grind at is the kind of things that are just basic engineering. The stuff I love is meeting people and like coming and finding out about this and how you've got to do it. Like that, that for me is the best bit of all of it. So even if I didn't do anything else, I'd be doing these, right? This is your woodworking shop.
Yeah, so this is my wood shop, and so this is kind of where everything comes to fruition. And yeah, like this is it where I've prepped quite a lot, because I was at a point where I was like making them one at a time, so then I kept having to reset up.
Yeah, sure.
It made a lot more sense to kind of get to this point, like goes back to like my manufacturing.
Yeah, kind of background. Productionize if you can.
Yeah. And then like, it's like, this is a nice sort of, like, all my stuff, it's like, it's good. Like, it's adequate, it does what it needs to do. Mm-hmm. It's not like the Porsche of table saws or anything like that, but it's perfectly accurate.
If the finished product is great,
Yeah,
I'm sure at some point, if you, you know, in a few years, you might upgrade. But hey, look, you're churning out great stuff that people love.
Yeah, like it's perfectly adequate, and like that's the same for like my drill press and all of my tools.
Mm.
Like, I just, it's really surreal to be at this point where like this is all mine.
Yeah, I bet.
Because I grew up like tinkering in my dad's workshop. And like I've always been quite a practical person, and now like I have quite a well-equipped shop.
Yeah,
and it's just like I'm really proud of it. Like it's a bit dusty, but
it's a wood shop. If you had a wood shop that wasn't dusty, I don't know what I would say.
Yeah, but like it's all mine, and
yeah,
I can do what I do well, and
I totally hear you. And in I don't know, 2 or 3 years' time, if I'm out there doing this as a job, I'd be the same as you, mate. I'd be in my element, get up in the morning and do something I love.
Yeah.
Go and meet people, find, you know, learn interesting new stuff that I didn't know before.
Yeah.
Like, that's the dream, right?
Because you've redone your garage recently, haven't you?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
That looks really smart. And I bet, like, when that came together, you were, like, really chuffed.
Oh, mate, the day the door went on, the lighting, the electrician in the lighting was going in, and, I spent ages designing how I want it and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like an annoyingly at the moment, it's all full of rubbish, but it's going to be stripped out again and cleaned out and, you know, treated like a lab pretty much.
Yeah.
So there's like a shooting stage and a kind of there's like more work, you know, workshop and areas for cameras to be permanently rigged and stuff, so I can just plug something in and I've got the same shot repeatedly. But all of that stuff is there, so no, I'm chuffed a bit of it. Small, but again, like, I'm not biting off more than I can chew. I don't want to invest like 100,000 quid into a unit and fit it all out and then be like, oh God, I've got to earn like 8 grand this month. You know, I don't want that. So,
but that's kind of like when I did this, is when I moved in, this was an empty shell. Mm. And like I had to insulate it and stuff like that. At this point, I'm still like having to like manufacture stuff at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was...
If you're building stuff, you're not making money, right? You're not building, doing your job, so...
And I didn't have, like, the freedom to go, okay, I'm going to take a 6-week pause and just make workshop perfect. So I kind of...
Yeah.
I've incrementally improved it. I got it to the point where it's, like, sort of like a minimum viable to do work.
Yeah.
And then kind of expanded from there. And, like, I thought... when I started laying it out, I kind of put stuff where I thought it would be.
Okay, yeah.
And then I was like, okay, now I can actually move it around. I think that's really important when you're designing like a workspace. Design is the wrong word. But when you're using workspaces, don't try and set yourself in stone too much initially until you've actually done a bit of work in it.
Mm.
Like the only way I would do something where you are kind of set in stone is if I was moving to a new shop now.
Right.
Because I know what works for me here.
For sure. And you can start using your experience to try and do something on a bigger scale. Yeah. So.
Like a prime example is this power cable for the saw,
which
goes all the way along the floor there.
Yeah.
But that's because when I put the saw here, this wall wasn't here.
So. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I've got a lot to do. But like,
it's, you know, it's not the rush, right? Like, you just, enjoying yourself and, you're sustaining life and your partner's happy and your kids are happy and
it's
a good work-life balance, you're on the right track anyway, so everything else will come.
Yeah, I mean, like, one of my favourite things about the fact that I do this is, like, my daughter's school is 5 minutes that way, my house is 5 minutes that way.
Perfect.
So I drop her off and I pick her up every day.
Yeah.
Like...
So I mean, and people don't do that, do they? Like, you know...
That was the thing, is I was missing a lot of my kids
when
I was working my old job. Because I'd have to be at work at 8:30 in the morning, and if not, it'd be earlier if I was doing early starts. I'd be finishing at 5. And by the time you finish at 5, you get home, you've had a shower, and you're still like not properly out of that moment.
Yeah.
Like, there's obviously negatives to it. Like Thursday and Friday last week, I was sat up till 11:30 at night on emails and stuff like that.
Catching up, of course.
But so like, I get to enjoy that time. And so I can be like a parent from like 4 o'clock till like 8 o'clock.
Perfect.
And then do
that. You can't get that time back, you know, like once those kids are growing up and stuff.
The biggest shock to it was when, it was probably about 6 months ago, you know, when you get notifications on your phone, like this happened 5 years ago or something.
Oh yeah.
I saw like pictures of me with the kids or pictures I had of the kids. And I was like, I remember that.
Really? And just because you were was so busy.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I was just busy, like, and everything was quite stressful. And
sure.
Like, I'm much lower, well, not lower stress, different stress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's in your gift to manage that, right? So
yeah.
You've got nobody, you're not working until midnight, and then your boss is you, fundamentally.
Yeah.
So you
boss is an asshole. But
boss is a slave driver, won't let me have any time off. Doesn't go on holiday.
Yeah, but I think that's like this isn't gonna make me like a rich man.
Sure. But,
like, and there is other stuff I plan on doing, but like this just gives me a level of comfort in life.
Yeah.
That I didn't have, and I don't think I could have if I had typical PAYE.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. I don't even think it's about, you know, the whole rich man stuff. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but I'd like to think that if you ask somebody that's really genuinely wealthy, you know, are they happy? And a lot of those people, you know, they'd say their happiest time is when things were simple, and they, like, money adds complexity, and then you're selling yourself to achieve certain things, and you're just building on that all the time. And yeah, I think you nailed it, mate. You know,
yeah, I don't like. See, the thing is, it's the only thing that money does to me is just buys freedom to kind of like make your own choices.
Yes. Yeah.
And like that's all I want. I don't want to like have, well, actually I do want to have five cars,
but, stables.
Yeah, like, mean, but the thing is, like, the five cars I want are all relatively cheap, if you know what
I mean.
But yeah, it's just, I'm just happy, you know what I mean?
That's it, mate.
That's all I want to be. Like,
and you know, and it's going to sound disingenuous a little bit probably, but and you're doing something that's sustainable, you're using like a natural product, and you're turning a waste product, effectively, or sometimes a waste product, into something that is then usable and desirable by other people. And you know, again, that's a cool place to be, given the circumstances. So
what I do is like, it's relatively low impact. Like, obviously, I have table saws and I use metal and stuff like that, and they do have an impact. But
put all these skateboards and they'd be
all of this would be landfilled. Well, probably not now, because there's actually quite a lot of us doing this recycled skateboard work. But like all of this would just be landfilled, and I never started it because I wanted to save them from landfill. But
the fact
I do.
It's like a nice offshoot, right?
It's a nice consequence.
Cool. So raw material then, first step from raw material, so whether it's a piece of hardwood or if it's a skateboard.
So pretty much what's the best way to do it? So what I've done is I've got my kind of raw material here, and I bring it in, and say for example we've got these two pieces. These will get ripped down to size, faces get sanded, and then they get glued up into a block.
Yeah.
Let me grab a block from there.
Yeah.
Then once they're a block, which would look something kind of similar to this, they just get center marked, and then they get drilled for the insert that gets glued into
it. Right, okay, cool.
And then once the insert's glued in, it goes on the lathe, like you saw earlier.
Yeah.
Then they go into clear coat. I mean, it's relatively simple, but I've refined the process a lot.
Yeah, of course.
And like, I know what does and doesn't work. And I mean, it's similar with hardwoods. You kind of end up with your block, and then you'll glue it up.
Mm-hmm.
Same process. Sure. It's relatively, like, when you explain it, it's simple, but it's the kind of finesse in the process.
I bet, yeah.
That makes it, like, which is where the real value's added, if you know what I mean.
Mm. So I had an idea, this is only an idea, this might sound like a terrible idea, but I'll tell you about it now.
Yeah.
The gear knob that's on I can't take it off. Off, but I'm not going to. It's got like a cap that runs around the face.
Yeah.
On the top and over the top, right? And then you've got the ball effectively that sits underneath it. I was wondering whether it would be possible to retain that, use, so almost like a donor. You'd end up with a donor, and the bit that's leather coated, I guess, replicate that in the wood, so it all just fits back together.
Can we have a look at it in a minute?
Yeah. It's only an idea, and I was just thinking that I've never seen it before.
I know on, I want to say the PDK.
Yeah, okay.
You can get replacement side covers, I think.
Right, okay.
Which...
I know what you mean. Yeah, the two
cups on the side. I know you can get those, like, you can swap those out for different colours or materials.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know it's feasible. Whether it's feasible in wood, that's the question.
Yeah, no, I hear you, yeah. So the bit that... So there's a video of Chris Harris with his... GT3 Touring, is the other GT3 Touring, and he was taking it on a track. It was the first time he'd taken it on a track.
Yeah.
And the gear knob just fell apart, and that cap just came off. And I was like,
really?
The cap comes off.
The cap came off when he was driving?
When he was driving, he was like, this is the only bit that's rubbish about this car, is this cap. Mine's never fallen off, but...
Yeah.
And I was thinking, that's what gave me the idea, because if you take it off, and you've got like the thing underneath, if you could recreate that, and then just put the cap back, glue the cap back on.
Yeah. Is the cap bonded on then, or...?
It's bonded on, yeah.
Alright.
Okay. I don't know how destructive it would need to be to remove it.
I think that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, like, I'd want to find a donor that was a bit messy to kind of start with.
That's my eBay watch list.
yeah. Mate, they're so expensive. The ones I find anyway, if I find them, they've been a couple of hundred quid for something as ratty. Yeah, look, I'm sure your eBay watch list is better than mine, but for a 991. Gear knob that's manual. Loads of PDK ones come out, just not that many manual ones. But anyway, if anyone's got one, they want to donate, by all means, get in touch.
That'd be much appreciated.
so get to a point where you come up with a product, there's obviously like a development phase, right? And this 981991 stuff where it's not quite as simple to manufacture, and that's the bit that when I've been like, when are you going to get it done? And then you sent me, and I'll insert these now, a couple of like renderings of, I don't know whether they were using CAD or SolidWorks or something, but...
Prism 360.
And it's that. So there's a bit of effort you've got to do to actually get from like, it's not quite as simple as just gluing some stuff together and then whacking it on a lathe. Like, that is the next step, right?
Oh yeah, like...
To make it so it fits on like a production manufactured gear knob, right?
So to put it in perspective, when I was developing 997, 996, because that's on the rectangular shaft, because I think it was from the early 90s till 997 finished. Porsche, for whatever reason, did rectangular shafts,
right?
Which is a pain in the ass, but that's what they did. And I spent probably put about 60-70 hours.
Did you really?
Into the total, like from when I first started thinking about it to by the point where I had it finished, kind of thing, that I was like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And I got really lucky. There was a bloke up in the Midlands who wanted one, and I was like, I don't suppose you could just measure a few parts for me?
Sure.
And he's clearly a fucking engineer, like probably half Porsche on his arm.
Right, okay.
But he sent me a fucking technical drawing.
Did he?
He sent me a dimension technical drawing. I was like,
amazing.
That's just perfect.
Yeah.
And thanks to him, I was able to like sort it out.
Yeah.
And I sent him a prototype, and it was like, works perfect. I'd change this and this and this. And so I implemented the changes.
Yeah.
Sent the next version back to him.
Yeah.
And he was like, yep, perfect.
Cool.
And I was just like, I can't workshop some help with that.
No. So this is, so for you guys that are watching this for the first time, this is a gear mechanism, the gear shift mechanism for a 981 and 991. This is a base model one. So the one I've got at the moment of the car is a GT4 shift. It's the same thing. The shaft's just slightly shorter. That's it. Really, you could probably just take some of the bottom of the length off and put it back in. You'd be fine. But anyway, I didn't put a new one on. So that left this for free. And it was on eBay. And then when Simon and I've been talking and trying to figure out how to get this done, I was like, well, why don't I just drop this off and you can do what you like. So.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you.
So what's your next step from this then to kind of start working on that?
So pretty much where I've already like done the CAD render of it.
Yep.
And like I've worked out the internals of it, pretty much I'm going to make the prototype.
Yep.
And fit it, check it works. Then what I'll do is I'll probably, like when I know that it works, I will send a prototype to a guy in the States.
Okay, yeah.
Because he's sent me a load of dimensions of one, because he really wants one as well.
Oh, okay, cool.
And he was like, yeah, mate, like...
Go for it.
So then I'll send it to him, like, he's really technical as well, so he'll fit it and then go, yeah, this should be fine. Like,
perfect.
Maybe if you want to change this.
Yeah.
Like, and pretty much we'll go from there. It's quite fortunate, because it's sort of a round shaft. and everything I do is turned and lathe work, so round stuff's easy. But yeah, that's kind of like what the process will be. What's the difference on yours, sorry? Is it
so the shaft's shorter, that's it. This bit's exactly the same.
Yeah.
The distance between that is just like there. So they knock about 20 mil off.
That's it?
That's it. The rest of it is exactly the same.
So what, this part's all the same part?
All the same, and that's the same with any 9X1 generation car. They're all the same. So that wouldn't necessarily fit onto the aftermarket stuff. They're different again.
Okay.
So, but just the Porsche factory, they're all exactly the same.
Oh, right.
Side throw's the same, 4.5 throw's exactly the same, just the shaft's shorter, that's it.
Oh, right.
But fitting's exactly the same.
That's really cool. Thank you.
it made total sense.
Yeah.
And it was just, again, a bit of serendipity that you were 20 miles away.
I
had no idea as well. I was like, I'm just going to drop it off. It makes no sense to send in the post, so.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Cool.
Well, right. It only cost you, what, like 30 quid in fuel to come here, as opposed to...
Well, I know, it cost... it cost 10 to get here, and then 25 quid driving backwards and forwards in the last mile.
Yeah.
Anyway, never mind.
But yeah.
Cool.
Nah, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. All right, so I shall leave you with that, and then, let me know. I'll come back at this any time, so if you...
Yeah.
When you get to the point where you've got a production prototype...
Yeah.
Give me a shout, I'll come and have a look before you send it off to the guy in the States. And
yeah, absolutely.
So I hope you really enjoyed that. That is the first little trip down to Build by Basil and his pretty epic little gear knob setup here. It's been a weird last minute serendipitousness, I don't know, whatever that word is. Bit of time with him and talking me through all this stuff. I hope you really enjoyed it. If you did, head over to Instagram, Rengineering, at Rengineering UK. Facebook is at Rengineering. And if you haven't so far, hit the bell icon, subscribe, like, tell your mates, share. You can share. In fact, now you can get these little Instagram handles. Fuck that stuff. So like, tag, share, subscribe if you haven't already. And we'll see you another time. Thanks so much for following. Take care. Bye-bye.